Hey guys, what is up? Welcome back to Flourishing with PTSD, a podcast designed to help normalize conversations around mental health, specifically in the context of PTSD, also known as post-traumatic stress disorder. If this is your first time tuning in for an episode, I would like to personally welcome you. And if you are a regular listener or someone who occasionally pops in for an episode here and there, welcome to you as well. My name is Manda, and I am the host. This is as good a time as any to let you know that I am not a medical professional in any capacity. I am not a doctor. I am not a therapist. However, I am a survivor of my fair share of trauma, and that's why I'm here, because so many of us are survivors of trauma, and we deserve to have a community where we can learn from each other and feel less alone in the thick of it all. So I will go ahead and put a trigger warning on today's episode. So please make sure to take a second, check in with yourself, see how you're doing, and then decide whether or not to continue. Oof. Okay. Do I dare say Happy New Year? I can't believe where we are now that we are in 2022. I am still stuck in 2019, if I'm being honest. I hope that you guys had a gentle holiday season and that you made it through okay. I know that my holiday season was definitely full of some roller coasters, but I was definitely thinking about you guys. So, really quick, in the last episode, we talked about the four different trauma responses, okay? That's fight, flight, freeze, and fawn, and how maybe we should be looking at changing the word fawn to feign, because as time goes on, that rhyme about sticks and stones doesn't prove true, because words can hurt and they can be damaging if we're not careful. And language is so important when we are talking about these terms. And fawn can be a potentially damaging term because of the connotation that it gives us. So if you haven't listened to that episode, I encourage you to do so, because I think that that's a very key part around PTSD and our responses to a traumatic event. But today, I am joined by a guest who is here to help with a conversation that is very near and dear to my heart, considering that it is very relevant to my own story of trauma. We are going to be talking about how trauma comes into play in the educational setting, more specifically, how it impacts the dynamic of the classroom and the presentation of content. And this is coming to you from a perspective of a peace educator and university adjunct professor. And I think that this is such a relevant conversation to be having right now because of the sizable exodus of teachers from the profession with the stresses of the pandemic and the expectations that are being put upon them and the added stress to students who are trying to understand a vastly different world that flipped upside down in the blink of an eye about five times over again in the last 2 years. And it's a lot for anyone of any age to process. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Kieran R. Taylor. Kieran, welcome to the podcast. Please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you so much for having me today, Manda. I'm absolutely honored. And yeah, you did a wonderful job introducing me so far. I identify as a politically engaged pacifist, an artist, and an educator. And I work as an educator in several capacities, including with the nonprofit Little Friends for Peace, where I train teachers, work with kids and adults, run international peace camps, peace circles, and do all of these programmings and answering violence with skills for peace. So that's one of the ones that's very dear to my heart that I've been doing since I was a kid myself. I'm also a university adjunct at St. John's University, where I have taught several courses in government and politics. I'm also about to co-teach a course in global fieldwork. And finally, I work with children in food empowerment and sustainability education as well through a social enterprise I've created with my aunt called Taylor Adiposia Group.
Wow. So you've got a lot going on there. How amazing. And what an incredible thing to say that you have a passion for peace. I think that that is absolutely incredible. And I am absolutely inspired.
Thank you so much. I'm inspired by this podcast so much. So I'm very glad to be here today.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm so excited to have you here talking about, you know, and we've talked in preparing for this podcast, we have talked about several things. And, you know, I mean, having a passion for peace in a conversation about trauma, trauma responses, and maybe even trauma prevention. I think, you know, I encountered some of my trauma when I was in high school, and the fact that, you know, these adults that, you know, as a student, you know, were surrounded by for the majority of our adolescent years, without that trauma-informed knowledge and that just that conversation in general kind of being swept under the rug. You know, I'm really excited to have this conversation to help move that forward. And hopefully this will reach the ears of someone, whether it's a student or a teacher or a principal or a superintendent, or someone working in educational policy, that they will hear this and realize that that's such a key part of not only keeping our students safe, but our teachers, and also maybe, you know, who knows who could be involved, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, Kieran, I would first of all like to ask you, why do you think it's relevant to talk about mental health in the classroom? Some people might argue that the classroom is not the place for that conversation, that, you know, teachers might be trying to take on too much, or that we're putting too much on the teachers. So just in a broad perspective, why is it important to talk about mental health in the classroom?
Thank you for that question. And I would, you know, I've recognized those arguments from people who don't find it to be the appropriate place. But, you know, more generally, I think that every place that people are in general in life, that needs to be a trauma-informed place in order to start doing some of this prevention work and healing work. But in terms of the classroom, I think I'm going to speak specifically to the college classroom environment. Here, I think it's so important because of the college environment, many students are actually coming to an understanding of what trauma is and processing that trauma now that they've left their families or whatever life circumstances they're in, especially in such an academic environment that does have more conversations surrounding mental health than perhaps what we see in high school settings. So I think in that setting, it's really important to be mindful of what students are going through, what they might be learning on those topics, and how that might be re-triggering in itself. And for me, when I consider my students, I, of course, want them to engage with the content of my course and not just learn about, you know, political science or whatever I'm teaching them, but also engage with that through who they are, what they're fulfilled by and what they enjoy, and have the mindfulness that whatever the course may be, their engagement with it will serve them if it's done through who they are and if it's done through a safe environment that's enjoyable for everyone, including me as a teacher. So I'm not one of those educators who views their subject or content as more important than the holistic education of their students, and moreover, the mental health of their students. I never want to see a student, whether they have been diagnosed with any sort of mental health disorder or difficulty or struggling with that actively or not, I never want to see a student not fulfilling their purpose in life. And so when I say this, I mean nothing related to productivity, but rather what fulfills them and what brings them intrinsic peace, and then by consequence, peace around them. So students living in survival mode can seriously confuse their purpose at times or make it a struggle to embrace themselves and connect with that. And in the context with survivors, this can be because you know pain or have experienced trauma and bad things, and that, you know, that shakes you. So in my classroom, I want to make it as safe as possible and as responsive to those realities as possible in order to help students be themselves, learn the content of the course, and generally just not contribute to the problems of trauma and ill mental health that are being perpetuated in so many settings.
Thank you so much for that answer, Kieran. I think, you know, like, I can tell that you are definitely trauma informed because of when you use terms like a student living in a survival, state of survival or survival mode, you know, like my mind instantly goes to that fight or flight, freeze or feign response, and how, you know, your nervous system can definitely get trapped in that state of, you know, existence if you are not, you know, if you don't get to follow through on those, you know, actions or emotions, or, you know, if you don't get to complete that trauma is like what they say, or, you know, it's just, it's very easy. Or if you're in constant or chronic danger, you know, like that's a very scary place to be in. And that can definitely distort a person's sense of purpose. And, you know, especially like in the college setting, you know, these young minds are going to get further developed and to explore a purpose and find their passion. And, you know, that's really hard to do when you come into the classroom in that survival mode, you know? And so I love that you said that. And I think that it's so important for teachers to understand that, you know, when you take care of the person, when you care for the person, productivity follows, you know. And there are so many studies out there, and I wish I could name some off the top of my head, but I can't, that suggest, you know, like in the workplace, when the workplace cares more for the workers, productivity automatically increases, you know. And when you don't waste people's time either with busy work or just kind of, like you said, like using the content just to, you know, maybe boost your credibility as a professor, or, you know, adding to, you know, maybe let's just call it your ego, right? Like that can definitely be damaging to the student. And so I just love that you said that. And I'm so grateful that there are professors in the world that think like you do, and that you are not just implementing that in your classroom, but that you are seeking out opportunities to tell others about how this works. Just like, thank you so much. That deeply excites me.
Thank you so much for saying that. And I think honestly, this goes back to that question of like, why should there be mental health awareness in the classroom? And once you are trauma informed, it completely affects the way that you approach teaching or your discipline, even like my discipline of political science. The way that I engage in that field is really different coming from the trauma informed background. And I think the reason why many educators often do not focus or consider mental health of their students is because they lack that training in considering that or including this based in their plans. And I think that's changing to some extent with COVID-19, which is, you know, a silver lining right there. But I think, you know, it's also that belief that some professors or teachers have that they are there solely to teach their discipline and that they don't have responsibility in creating that safe environment, which I believe every educator does have.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, if they're not trauma informed either by training, you know, they, like, teachers might be living in their own survival mode too, and maybe therefore unable to give because no one had that conversation with them, you know. It's just wild, like all the different connections that exist out there. Yeah. I'm curious, you know, as you are implementing these practices into your classroom, and not to put other people down because, you know, we're all learning, but do you see other professors incorporating this as well? Or do you feel that where you are, at least, this is something that's relatively unique and authentic to your practice as a professor?
I think that in my experience, I can't really speak now to what my colleagues are doing because I feel like I don't have that awareness as much. When I was a student, I don't think that I saw this very often from my teachers, with a few exceptions that were really formative in me, you know, looking at that and seeing them as role models and doing that. But I think, you know, it's different outside of the college environment. With the nonprofit I work for example, they train teachers in trauma-informed care and in social emotional learning, and that is completely cognizant of trauma and how that affects social relationships and learning. So I think there's a lot of good practices to look at in the educational field, but I do think universities specifically do need some reform in this area.
Yeah, that's amazing. So let's talk about the beginning of the school year. What are some things that teachers and professors might do to kind of prepare themselves mentally for the year? And I know that we are, you know, coming back from Christmas break, or, you know, like, so there, like, this is also like a refreshed, you know, like, what do you do after having a break and you're preparing to go back to school? What do you think, what do you have as far as advice for that?
I liked what you said earlier, kind of that phrase, we're all learning. We're all still learning, even if you're a teacher, professor, or whatever sort of educator, you still are able to learn and grow. So I think one thing I would suggest is, you know, embracing your own talents and passions more and infusing that into your teaching methodology as much as possible in the context. So, you know, even if you're teaching something like political science, what are things that you do to bring yourself peace, whether it's like something kind of more typical like meditation or journaling or something like that. Can you suggest that to your students? Can you make sure that you're kind of passing along that sort of wisdom as well as the content of your course? And I think, you know, going into the school year, being aware of what are those mental health resources for your students at your specific institution or in your area, and being aware of those for yourself and then for the students as well. I did create something that I kind of wanted for myself, which is an educator's peace pledge that I see as a reminder and motivation for supporting students' mental health, especially in the COVID-19 context. So I can read that really quickly. This is just as an example of something you can do to kind of ground yourself into the new school year or semester. And it is a resource that I have made public because I think it can be really helpful for people who need that. So with this educator's peace pledge, it says, "I am an educator looked up to by students. I pledge to ground myself before I connect with students. I will be mindful that I need to be committed to the well-being and peace of my students, to treat students with respect and care. I will be aware of what they may be going through as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as the suffering I or my community have experienced, while keeping in mind the potentials for joy and peace in life that still exist. To build peace within my lessons by incorporating socio-emotional learning techniques, fostering community, and sharing and encouraging peace practices. To model peace in a time of unpeace for so many, myself and my students will learn better if we are pursuing peace." So wow. I think to sum that up as well, what I said at the end there, we'll learn better if we're pursuing peace. I think keeping that perspective in mind going to the school year can be really helpful and really impactful in how things progress.
Yeah. And I'm sitting here and I'm kind of chuckling in my head a little bit. And I think it's, and I don't say this spitefully at all. I think I'm honestly very intrigued, and I'm very, again, just inspired because, you know, you are in the realm of politics and government, and you have a passion for peace. And I think that right now, you know, politics are such, it's such a trigger for everybody. And, you know, we're always talking about it. It's everywhere, and everything that was once not politicized is now politicized. And so I think that that's amazing that you, especially in that particular classroom setting, taking into account how important peace is in that setting, in that politics kind of learning setting, because not only when you're learning about politics should you have a foundation of peace built in and kind of commingling with that, but you know, like when we talk about trauma responses and, you know, like learning how to handle something that is upsetting, like while co-learning about doing it peacefully, I think that there's a lot to be learned from that. So again, I just really admire that practice and the pledge that you have. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you. And I think what you just commented in terms of politics, I didn't say this in my introduction, but I have done a lot of work around 3 years with research, writing, and advocacy within the United Nations Civil Society, which basically means non-governmental international affairs. Mm. And we do interact with the United Nations and with governments in that capacity. But what I really, really noticed in doing that work is that even the people doing the most admirable humanitarian work and, you know, work that is for the sake of helping people, reducing poverty, you know, ending homelessness, this sort of work, a lot of those people who are doing that amazing work really need personal peace. Like they become very overwhelmed by that work. And I think that's true for a lot of people in some of the most intense disciplines, such as political science and environmental science. And, you know, that's something that we can change. That's something we can provide, is those mental health and peace skills. So that's something that I am really passionate about working on and infusing into those environments as well.
I really admire that. So we just talked a little bit about, you know, like what teachers can do and professors can do to kind of prepare themselves mentally for the year. And you mentioned kind of just finding what your passions are and, you know, like what brings you peace and really capitalizing on those. What about students? What can students do as they prepare for a school year and checking in with themselves, you know, throughout the year?
Yeah, so I will keep coming back to this notion of embracing your natural talents and passions, because those can be framed within your schedule and within your classroom engagement and in engagement with the course. So that's something I love to emphasize, you know, in a political science course, is I want you to identify like what you're passionate about and see how it can intersect with what we're talking about, because that way you're going to be so much more interested. You're going to be advancing your own interests or goals, as well as, you know, maybe doing well in the course. So I think that's a really important way for students to kind of doing that reflection and identifying those passions, because they are relevant. They do become relevant. And I think that's somewhere where teachers also need to give guidance is, okay, you know, this might seem irrelevant, but is there some sort of connection, or like the indirect and closest things, so that we're trying to keep your interest and trying to make it an enjoyable experience. Apart from that, I think breathing exercises are some of the easiest ways to keep your body and mind calm during, you know, of experience of trauma and just everyday life. Breathing is totally underrated. And whether if that peace practice doesn't work for you, finding something else that does, like self-affirmations or tapping technique or something of the like. And I think, you know, in preparation for the school year, if you are diagnosed with something and feel comfortable, you can disclose that to teachers either directly or through what universities often have called the Office of Disability, which I don't think is the most welcoming name. But yeah, I think that considering that disclosure and how you might approach that is important as well.
Interesting. So yeah, let's talk about the relationship that exists between teachers and students for a minute, or rather, you know, like that dynamic that exists in classrooms. So first, in your opinion, as a professor, do you think that there is a value in students coming to you with their mental health concerns? And, you know, I ask this wanting to be sensitive to how much we are putting on teachers, because, you know, like from what I've heard and seen firsthand from teachers in my own life, is that, you know, they already have so much to manage. And so if they have these students coming up to them, you know, disclosing these things, you know, that can put a lot on them as well. But ideally, you know, what do you think about that?
So short answer, students should be able to freely communicate that. I don't think this is the easiest answer, though, because with this, yes, I think there should be the expectation that the institution or organization that the teacher works with have supported the teacher preparation for this. So if teachers have the appropriate mental health first aid training, knowledge of resources on the campus or local, are trauma informed and can respond appropriately, there should be no issue with this. And when I say respond appropriately, that is not just accepted students, it's in taking care of themselves as well. So a dear friend of mine who's a teacher has created an environment for students and a relationship to them where many come to them and share their needs and stories and ask for help. And with all of these skills that they have to respond to them and help them, they still have to do things for themselves, like take a mental health day occasionally, speak with their own therapist if they become triggered, or go to the administration to communicate that more counseling or mental health supports are needed for those students. And one reason why teachers do become resentful is because of all the extra work they are asked to do in addition to teaching their content. The communication and emotional needs of students can take up any amount of time. You know, it's not something that can be completely anticipated, though teachers can enforce their own boundaries in terms of when they might engage with students or be on their email or what have you. But the truth is that this can trigger them as well, and the responsibility for giving the tools for teachers to deal with these communications falls to the institutions and how they train the teachers and what they're being compensated for.
Right, right. And I think, you know, I think that it's really important to point out, and I think we kind of talked about this in the beginning, but just to rearticulate it, is that, you know, like some people might say, well, that, like, if you have mental health struggles, like, go see a therapist or someone that is already trained, you know, like, are we going to train teachers for more of these things? But the reality is that, you know, first of all, again, we are talking about people who spend a majority of time in, you know, a classroom setting, or, you know, even a workplace. Like, this can extend to like a corporate and administrative setting as well, you know, or, you know, any kind of workplace. And this should be a more common conversation. And some people might say also, well, you know, how are teachers supposed to manage that? And I really like what you said about, okay, first of all, teachers are being given so much that they have to do. And if we can also reevaluate a little bit of, you know, delegating what teachers really should be doing and handling, and then the fact that we need to be supporting teachers much better than we are. Like, I think that there's, it's a heavy conversation and there's a lot to unpack, but, you know, on, you know, the kind of level that we're talking about, I totally agree. And that everybody, not just teachers, but everyone should have a form of mental health first aid training. I think that that's absolutely essential to living in the world as we know it today.
That's an amazing point.
Yeah. I mean, cause like when you think about it, really, I mean, like it's not just teachers, right? Like, we should all be able to talk about these basic mental health discussions, right? Like, we should know the mental health basics, right? And like, recognize signs, recognize maybe like, oh, you know, like Zoe's not doing well. Maybe I should go and ask her how she's doing. And like, oh, she's showing signs of this, you know, very basic. We're not talking about needing a psychology degree, right? But I just found that very interesting. And I could talk about that forever. So I apologize for rambling. But
no, but part of kind of a revolution in what we are educating. So that's something I've been advocating for, is public spaces like libraries and gyms and even, you know, medical offices as a great example. They should be trauma-informed. Yes. Because there are people who are interacting with those spaces that are traumatized. And it's not, as like you said, in today's world, this is just not abnormal anymore, unfortunately. And we have to be responsive to that. We have to be aware of what we are seeing in terms of people's mental health and social needs and all of that. And that means changing in terms of, you know, what we expect from these places.
Totally. Absolutely. And it's not just like one person or one specific group of people that are experiencing these mental health, you know, distresses, right? Like, this is something that is happening like nationwide. And even like, I would even go as far to say maybe even global. So like, we are all reacting to something and it's creating some kind of distress. So I think that, yeah, I think I like what you said about just being responsive to the needs that we're seeing. I think that that's a very great point. So again, like, also speaking of that, how has your relationship with mental health influenced your teaching style and attitude in the classroom? Did your experiences as a student impact your approach to education now?
Yeah, so I think I might smush my responses to those together, in that the times that I've done the worst in school were in classrooms or relationships with the professor, where I was for some reason triggered by the actions or attitudes of them. And mind you, this is largely unintentional on their behalf. You know, we can assume that most teachers really do care for their students and hopefully for their disciplines as well, right? Mm-hmm. But it comes from that lack of trauma-informed training. So in a classroom where there may have been more pressure or stress, or, you know, where I feel like my voice wasn't being heard for whatever reason, I tended to learn less and retain less information, ultimately implying that those teachers' objectives for their teaching weren't fulfilled as best they could in me as a student. So for me, becoming an adjunct professor at age 23 was an amazing gift to me for my career. But more importantly for that, it was an amazing gift because it allowed me to be particularly innovative in my approach, because I had been a student merely, you know, months earlier. So, and when I was a student, I was very successful in terms of grades and achievements. But what professors maybe couldn't see is that I had experienced compound traumas. So before school and in school, I'm not unique in those experiences whatsoever. I've met so many people who have experienced trauma. And again, in that university setting, especially there, you know, where we're finally getting the language and time to identify and discuss that, I met a lot of people like that. So teaching college courses has been an amazing experience for me because I feel like it totally has been influenced by my experience as a student and the type of trauma-informed training that I've had and the peace education that I've been a part of since I was a child myself. I working with the nonprofit Little Friends for Peace, I began training to teach children when I was a child at age 11. And so like I finally was able to lead groups and have, you know, a real sense of responsibility in education and in teaching at a really young age of 14. So that experience absolutely transferred over into teaching in the government and politics discipline because I was aware of their intersections with each other. And then more ultimately, the reason why I fell in love with political science was because I see the amazing potential to infuse governmental policies and, you know, the political processes and institutions that we have with peace in order to have those outcomes that we want of sustainable development, of peace, of human rights. So I think all of that really, really influenced what I do in the classroom and moreover, why I'm in the classroom, why I want to be there.
Wow. That's incredible. I mean, and I would just like to echo that what you said about how like your experiences definitely did do influence the kind of professor that you are. And I think that that's so relevant because I think that's universally applicable in how we go about any approach. And I know that definitely like, you know, when I work with kids, my experiences with trauma and hiding, you know, some of the pain that I was experiencing or the discomfort that I was, you know, feeling, hiding that. And so like when I work with kids, I'm like, okay, like, you know, first of all, don't jump down their throat for something that, okay, like let's ask some questions instead of assuming that they are fine and they're just being, you know, difficult to be difficult. Like, no, if there's one thing I've learned in my time as a psychology student and graduate is that every behavior has a cause and a reason. It's never just because. So yeah, it's never just because of, you know, anything. So there's always a cause for it. So I really like yes. how you mentioned that. So yeah. So as a teacher with your own story of trauma and PTSD, there are going to just be days where naturally you're going to feel like you just can't teach to your full potential, whether maybe you are feeling triggered during the day by something or maybe the anxiety is acting up. What do you do then? What are some strategies for implementing appropriate grounding techniques in the classroom that could benefit teachers and students?
This is a really important question because the reality of living with PTSD or, you know, even undiagnosed PTSD and just the experiences of trauma in your life can mean that you're going through something in your profession or teaching where you are triggered and, you know, you are working through that in many cases. So I think it's important in that case, and just generally like I've been advocating for, to begin, you know, teaching and lessons with some sort of grounding technique or peace skill that you're offering to your students, but it's mutually benefiting you in that you are grounding yourself, you kind of walking the talk, or right? So like practicing what you preach in that way. So I really like to start with some breathing or a small meditation or some sort of mindfulness exercise like five finger breathing, where you breathe in with your right hand tracing your thumb, and at the top you breathe out going down the other side, and doing that for your five fingers. And it's something so small, it takes, you know, a minute, or it can take, you know, up to 5 minutes or something, depending on what you decide to do. But that's just such a great opportunity to teach a skill while also, you know, honoring the reality of everyone in the classroom that breathing and being mindful and doing these sorts of things is good for you, whether diagnosed PTSD or not. So that's something I really like to be mindful of. And, you know, on those days when maybe your anxiety is really bad, you can refer to the expertise of like someone else, pulling up a YouTube video or doing something like that. And, you know, even when school became online due to COVID-19, that's something I like to do. You know, it's saying at the beginning of the lecture, okay, check in with yourself before we jump into this, kind of how you give a trigger warning on the episode. You know, maybe the content isn't necessarily triggering, but you have no idea what's going on in someone's life. So being mindful of that, you know, you just don't know. So that's what I like to do. And, you know, I feel like it's almost destigmatizing to say that coming from an educator, that I do need to do these things for myself. I need to do peace practices and mental health care for myself in order to support students in the way that I like to.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. When I think back to high school, you know, in the days when, you know, I was going through some of my abuse and everything, I remember like one of my favorite moments was going to choir, because, you know, I was a big choir kid, right? Loved it. And we would start every class with two kids going down in front of the rest of the group, and they would lead stretches. We would turn on like a really good song that, you know, was popular at the time, and we would just kind of jam out and stretch and kind of just like reconnect with our bodies and, you know, with each other before starting some pretty intensive choir work. And, you know, it was just incredible. Or in another setting, you know, like with therapy, right? You're about to do some deep soul searching in therapy, right? And my therapist personally, like, she always starts a session with a grounding technique. And let's see if I can recall it off the top of my head, because it's kind of like muscle memory. But, you know, she'll say, okay, ready to center. And then she'll ask me, okay, will you name what feels warm and what feels cold in your body? And so you name that. And then she'll say heavy and light. And then you name what's heavy and light, and then contracted and relaxed. And then we kind of just take three deep breaths after that, and then we begin the session. And it's just such a good way to connect and ground. And I think that there's so much value in any setting, whether you're going to work or whether you're going into the classroom. And like you said, it's destigmatizing when it's led by the authority in the room. Like, yes.
And that's really a lovely example from your therapist, because, I mean, it's another example where they are benefiting from doing that with you, right? Because they're about to do an amazing, you know, job leading therapy, but it can be triggering for them to hear these things. So it's exactly, it's an example of mutual benefit coming from these, you know, these new techniques of education.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. So can you explain how, because, you know, like you said that you focus on peace education, and I want to know a little more about that. Can you explain how peace education can help prevent trauma?
So I think in one way, it's an important distinction to say, like, one thing it can do is prevent compound trauma, where like people are re-experiencing it or having traumas added up upon each other. So in the context of peace education, where the environment is safe, where your emotions are being considered as the content that's being taught, it can be preventative in that it's, you know, it's doing all that in order to respond to the social needs and the potential that people in that environment did experience. That's a little convoluted, but I think on the other hand of it, it's also a lot of what peace education is. Of the individual. So like, how do you have personal peace? How do you have peace with yourself and believe in the notion? Then conflict resolution. This broader perspective of social movements or community peace or what we need in a larger sense globally. So maybe even political issues, but peace education provides skills that can then prevent trauma by improving your relationship to yourself, improving your relationship with others, and improving your relationship, you know, to the global community. So it's really a unique thing in that those skills are applicable in many situations. And, you know, what could turn into a really bad situation with those skills at some points can be improved or de-escalated. And that's mm-hmm. not to ever, you know, I feel like in the context of this conversation, it's really important to say that's not victim blame or anything like that. I'm trying to say more in the point of like, in a difficult family relationship, you can de-escalate, so prevent triggers. And that should never be a burden that's placed on, you know, just people who are seeking like peace education or trauma-informed care. But I feel this is why I'm more advocating for this to be more normalized in society and more considered a part of the structure of educational curricula, because it's really important that everyone has these skills.
Totally. And then can you repeat, I think you said there were three parts of like the aspect of the peace education, because you were breaking up a little bit there, and I heard everything up to about like the conflict resolution. And so could you repeat that part there for me?
Yeah, I think the most easy way to kind of rephrase it is peace in myself, peace with others, and peace in the world. So meaning personal peace, interpersonal peace, and kind of global peace or communal peace.
I love that. I love that. And, you know, like when those things are in harmony, you know, there will just, that's like a wonderful byproduct of that will definitely be, you know, less compounded trauma. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So then like, when we talk about that now, like what does an ideal classroom setting look like in your eyes?
Yeah. So whether in person or virtual, I'd say that it looks like a safe and caring environment, where I think that in that capacity, the teacher or the professor or whatever leader there, you know, that they are providing a safe and caring space. And a trauma-informed space, this is honestly such a large topic. So just to say that the setting, like the setup of the space and even the colors of the space can affect the moods of people. So trauma-informed space is one thing. I'd love to get into that at another time. And yeah. Then, you know, whether in person or virtual, again, that there are resources available, readily available for mental health and local services that you never know who might need that. And then kind of another thing I'd like to bring up in terms of what an ideal classroom might look like is this idea that my aunt Lucy Taylor has, advocate for children's rights, and she's my partner in the enterprise I mentioned earlier that's called Taylor Adiposia Group. And we work for food empowerment and practical life skills for kids. But she has this really awesome idea that we're trying to pursue, which is believing that classrooms should have readily available fresh fruits and vegetables in them. And she says that this will help create a safe environment and that you have food security in that classroom. And then, of course, it can help students find and retain information if they are having their nutrients being met, you know, comfortable, which is an effect that food can have. So I really like that idea. I love the idea of possibly having future, especially at like the levels of elementary school, middle school, and high school, where they're readily available fruits and vegetables for children.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and because I mean, nutrients is such a huge part of mental health in general, right? When you are not, when your body is not receiving what it needs, your mental health is one of the first things that gets affected. So I definitely stand behind that, and I am excited to learn more. And for the listeners out there, you know, all of the information and links and everything like that to what Kieran is talking about are going to be in the podcast details. So if you want to learn more, definitely scroll down to those podcast details and take a look and see maybe how you can contribute to, you know, some peace education and trauma informed care out there, because that is essential for us making progress on these issues. So to kind of wrap things up, Kieran, what advice do you have for teachers and professors out there who are looking to invite these conversations and practices into their classrooms?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to reiterate two points that I've already touched upon, just in that it's for teachers who are feeling overwhelmed, tired, you already have so much going on, you can outsource these sorts of peace skills or, you know, groundings for your students by finding someone else in the school or another organization that can address these topics for your students. Or, you know, if you don't want to lead something like a breathing or meditation yourself, you can always find one online very easily. So I think that's, you know, just a way to address that question of burnout pretty easily as well. And then another thing is finding what works for you. So whatever, you know, we've mentioned a bunch of options there in terms of something that might support your students' mental health or peace. And, you know, that's breathing or meditation or whatever it is, it can be, you know, easily incorporated into your syllabus in some sort of way. I think one example for me is that on certain assignments, you know, a request aside, I like to say, okay, writing a lot, I know they're really tired. In this response to the reading, maybe they can make an art, they can do a voice recording. And then they have the option to write as well. And, you know, I'm giving this example from my teaching. In the political science discipline, a lot of times the students still choose to write, and that's totally fine. But accommodating multiple types of learners and giving options is something that's so easy and also so helpful for students. You know, I've gotten a lot of feedback that supports me doing that. And wow. Yeah, I think those are my real suggestions in terms of what teachers can do. And I really encourage you, any teachers out there, to make some movements in this area, because I just know that students are really sort of stuff and can benefit from it.
That is so incredible. Kieran, thank you so much. Like, I know that for those listening, I mean, it's a big thing to kind of digest. And, you know, like we say this again, as we are still learning how to articulate and, you know, feel for where this movement can kind of take form and where progress can be made. But I really, really am inspired by a lot of what you said. And I would love to learn more about the projects that you're doing and kind of keeping up with what you are up to. So where can we find you on social media, and how can we keep up with the projects that you're working on or have worked on?
First of all, I just want to say a huge thank you for you, Amanda, for inviting me and for creating the wonderful community you have through this podcast. Honestly, it's a wonderful initiative, and I'm so happy to contribute in whatever small way. And yeah, so in terms of what I'm up to right now, you know, what I mentioned, the peace education work that I do with Little Friends for Peace, I'm doing virtual peace circles and just keeping up with that peace education that I think is so important. I'm also, through Taylor Adeposia Group, managing children's programs for food empowerment and practical life skills that are based in Virginia. And I'm really excited to say that we received a Green Heart International Global Impact Grant in order to support the establishment of a kids' community garden for sustainability and education that we're going to implement in the spring. And that's just, I'm so excited about it. It's going to give kids food security and the practical skills to grow their own food. So that's, you know, something I'm very passionate about. And I guess just to sum it up, because I do like to overextend myself and do a lot of things, but the last thing I'll mention is that I'm the co-founder of Peace International Political Party. So we create international community and empower individuals to actualize social justice, international laws, and human rights. So I'm developing that with my co-founder, as well as speaking for before the Mexican Congress in a few days to share about those projects. So yeah, wow. I'm super excited about all of that. And you know, anyone listening today can find me on Instagram. My username is Kieran R. Taylor, and I'm sure it's going to be in the description. Mm-hmm. And, you know, through that, you can view my website or find out my email if you want to get in touch.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah, I mean, girl, you are doing everything under the sun right now. And I just, like, I want to thank you for all of your hard work and for sharing your passions with the world and for, you know, I mean, like, there's nothing greater than, you know, teaching kids how to better care for themselves in case, you know, maybe they are not being as well taken care of, or maybe you know, they just need some extra help. And also just like going around the world. I mean, you're in Mexico right now. That is amazing and incredible. And I'm hoping that you're sending some sun up to the Pacific Northwest, because it's raining here right now, nonstop. But I mean, and like, I do not say this in a condescending way, but I am so proud of you for all that you're doing. I applaud you and your efforts, and I look forward to keeping in touch and seeing where this journey takes you. I mean, how exciting.
Thank you so much. And the admiration is totally mutual. So yeah, I can't wait to hear the rest of these podcast episodes.
Thanks. Me too. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much, Kieran, for coming on and talking with us today. And, you know, about this very timely and relevant conversation. And I think that COVID has enabled many of us to step back from things and systems that were just normal and realize that there is perhaps some serious reform that needs to take place in order to serve a wider and more diverse population of teachers and learners. And, you know, after an experience like COVID that is collectively traumatizing to just about everyone, I am hopeful that we are moving forward with our eyes open to spot where change needs to happen, and, you know, with our ears open to hear the voices of those who are advocating for needs that have been neglected, and, you know, minds that are ready to embrace the challenge of change in order to advance classrooms and even workplaces in terms of the environment and treatment. It's just so crucial to take into account the conversation around mental health, not just at home behind closed doors, but taking this conversation outside to places where we spend most of our time, our jobs and school and, you know, these public spaces. It's just absolutely essential. So thank you for being here with us today. And Kieran, thank you again for trusting me in this community and for being open to sharing your perspective on mental health conversations in classrooms. We are all learning and doing our best out there. Keep hanging on. If you are struggling, my DMs are always open. And in the meantime, make someone out there smile, do some good, and let's keep ending the stigma one conversation at a time. Bye.
Bye.